Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week on Dr. Drew After Dark.
No. What are Tom and Christina up to?
I know. What are they saying?
Jesus Christ, guys.
I haven't even
looked at me. I haven't watched the show in a couple months. Can we?
I knew her from that, but she had a...
Happy Gilmore.
No.
Happy Gilmore. Sally Jesse Raphael. She on there?
No. Fuck you guys. She had a sitcom.
What don't you guys fucking get? It's Dr. Drew. His memory is going.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Dr. After Dark. My guest today is Jason Nash.
Jason. We just had some acai, so I'm doing the same thing. Dr. Drew.
I know, I've been traveling, and so I'm a little bit slurry.
Some chia seeds.
Don't forget, 818-253-1693 for the voice messages and drafterdark@gmail.com. And support the people to support us so I can talk to cool guys like Jason Nash. Jason, tell us where we can find you, whether it's the vlogs or the podcast. Where do you want people to go?
Just my podcast, All Good Things podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you had views also before that, right?
Yeah, and we had views with David Dobrik before that. And then you have vlogs on my main channel and then doing stand-up. And I'm in Austin and I'm here and this is... It's pretty cool.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, just to talk to you. I never met you before.
We've not met.
No.
So if we go to YouTube, it's Jason.
It's just Jason Nash Comedy on YouTube.
Jason Nash
Comedy. And then the podcast channel is All Good Things Podcast.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and we've had some good guests over there. We had Julie Bowen on there, Portnoy.
Oh, fantastic.
Nikki Glaser.
Oh, my God.
Danny DeVito. We got a strange call. I got a strange call one night at like 10 o'clock, and he was like, Danny DeVito's got a show coming out tomorrow. Could you film with Danny DeVito tomorrow? And I was like,
wow.
What?
Can you promote?
Yeah. So we went to his office and we filmed it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But Julie and Nikki are two of my favorite people.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
They're both incredible. Yeah.
Last time I saw Nikki was here. She did a stand-up at one of the big theaters.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I told her, guys, I've never heard so much material come out of somebody's mouth so quick. I mean, she loaded an hour and 15 minutes with so much material. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
it just kept coming. It kept coming at that rate.
Yeah, she...
Wild.
She took apart my Bumble profile once, and it was it was devastating.
And then Julie, I remember I actually was on, this is a very odd reference, but on, oh my gosh, I'm blanking her name. She was an actress. She was a nurse. She had a daytime talk show.
On the show, on Modern Family?
No. Julie and I were the guests on this daytime talk show. I can see her as clear as day.
Ricky Lake.
No, it's after
Kelly Clarkson.
That. No, you wouldn't remember. You'll remember her. She's an actress mostly.
Michelle Obama.
Any event.
Jeez, I'm drawing a blank.
I think she was in the film with... was it Steve Martin, where they had some screwy neighbors and a cabins by the lake or something?
Let's take the hour and figure this
vacation
out. This
forget
is crazy.
Any
Let's.
Any event.
I mean, I want to get to the bottom of it. I'm dying.
Yeah, me too.
Because you're like a smart guy, and I'm like really happy to be here. And so, if you're considering this, if this is tripping you up with all the knowledge and your Dr. Drew brain,
it's the aging brain
we
that drives
get
me insane.
Oh, get out of here.
That's the part that drives me crazy.
Oh, you are so ripped.
God bless you.
How do you do it? You've always been in shape.
I've always lifted weights. I've been doing this thing called V Shred now that I really like, and
V-shred.
I've lost 10 pounds. And
is that Mark Wahlberg's thing?
I don't know. It's just it's a trainer program, you know. And I'm finally doing what I'm supposed to do.
You get up at 3 a.m. and work out.
Don't do that stuff. I don't do that. And I just lifted heavy weights my whole life, and now I can't anymore. And so I have to follow directions of a trainer. That kind of.
I gotcha. Yeah, I go light myself.
Oh,
I don't want to get too big.
I'm still thinking about this woman because I loved her too. She was great. Anyway,
hey, do you know girls don't like ripped guys?
I know that they have a weird thing about not liking six packs very often.
Yeah, yeah. So like
they like doughy stomachs or something.
My Instagram homepage is just all shredded dudes. So you'd think, you know, that I was like,
yeah,
you know, into that.
Yeah.
And I guess I am.
Okay.
But I showed it to my, I showed it to my fiance and I was like, yo, I was like, look at this dude. Look how cut. He's like so ripped.
Yeah.
She was like, that's disgusting. And I was like, oh, so you don't like that? She's like, no.
It's weird. They like it when they're in a certain mood. Maybe it's some time of the cycling of the month, what hormones are in their system.
Sure,
maybe.
Yeah. Thunder from Down Under kind of thing. Bachelorette
maybe
party.
They kind of like it more like in real life than more in pictures. Like we like it more in pictures than in real life.
Yes, yes.
They
yeah.
like it the other way around. And I think they sometimes it I think it gets like, I don't want to say threatening, but it looks like maybe this isn't somebody who's going to stick around or something. So they don't like that. Or maybe this somebody isn't going to be nice to me.
Well, listen, anybody who's in the gym on Christmas Eve has got a problem.
And to be fair, gay men love it. Gay men love it.
What do you say?
Gay men love ripped men. I'm just saying, they do. That's okay. Just the way it goes.
All right, I'll check my sexuality.
I'm just
later.
Saying.
Tonight.
Whatever you're into, I'm just saying.
I don't know, man.
Gay men take care of their bodies.
Hey, did you know your algorithm is like what you pick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
I didn't know that for so long.
Oh, really?
I went to my friend. I was like, what's up with Instagram? My homepage, it's all big tits and girls in bikinis.
And you know what's even weirder? With TikTok, though, if your eyes sort of land too long on an image, they'll start sending you that stuff.
Yeah.
I can't control that.
Yes.
When they
yes.
send me certain things, my eyes go and they land and
yeah.
that's it. Now all of a sudden, bathing suits.
Now I get a lot of Joe Rogan ice baths.
Oh, I've seen those.
And Lizzo in a swimsuit. I get that a lot.
I've seen those.
So those are.
But back to Julie Bowen. We were guests on this show. We were guests on this show.
Yeah.
And she was trying.
Network, daytime?
Daytime, afternoon. Midwest.
It's like Oprah Winfrey, but you couldn't think of it.
No. Oh, no. Blonde, shoulder-length hair.
Jenny Suzanne Craig. Summers.
What is it?
Jenny Craig?
No, it's more recent than
Wait,
that.
Scarlett Johansson.
It's Ellen,
so
obviously.
Look up actress, daytime talk show.
Let's get to the bottom.
Midwestern.
Fuck helping people with
something
problems.
Like that. None of those.
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore.
1990s. Or 2000, 2005, let's say.
Is it Aaliyah? Rest in peace.
Sherry Shepherd.
Rolanda Watts is more in that time
zone. It's
got
to be Ellen.
No,
sure
Rolanda was
Ellen?
In the time zone. Rolanda was in there.
Haley Williams? Jenny McCarthy.
Katie Kirk.
It's all in that zone.
Jenny McCarthy, you would know.
I want to say it was Mary, her first name. It was like Mary or something.
Judge Judy.
Any event, while we're looking through this, keep going through it. It's sort of
Bonnie Hunt?
Bonnie Hunt.
Ah,
yes,
Bonnie Hunt.
Bonnie Hunt.
We got there.
Thank you.
Finally got to the bottom.
We did it.
Oh, damn.
Okay, so
Bonnie Hunt had a TV show.
Yeah.
Julie and I, Julie and I,
all that for that.
Julie and I were the guest on this talk show,
right.
And I loved Bonnie Hunt. I really did.
Sure.
And she, Modern Family had not come out yet. Julie was promoting Modern Family, and she was trying to explain it to me.
Uh-huh.
And it reminds me of it when. I had a similar experience with Michael Myers, who I met one time. He came on Loveline long time ago. Adam and I were doing the Loveline in Florida for
Mike
spring.
Mike Myers. Yeah, not the killer.
Not the killer. Yeah. Not the ski right. mask. And he came on the show and...
Rosie O'Donnell.
International man of mystery that Michael Myers.
Austin Powers.
Austin Powers did not come out yet. See, Agent Green will fuck you up. Austin Powers, we had not come out yet, and he was trying to explain that
like
to
charades.
Us. I know. But then your brain is literally.
Says, yeah, baby.
Your brain is
Austin Powers.
Literally 15 years younger than mine. It makes a difference, I'm telling you. And so he was trying to explain what that character was. We could not understand. He goes, he's an international man of mystery. He's a 007
ride.
Character, but he's like, not. And we're like, you'd be time travel, like what?
Right.
Talking to Julie Bowen about Modern Family was the same experience.
That's hilarious.
She was like, well, it's kind of a new take on a sitcom with families. And my husband's, she was trying to describe the husband character. And I couldn't get it. I just didn't understand it.
Yeah. My Vin Diesel asked my uncle for $10,000 to make a short film. And my uncle told him he'll never make it in the business. So, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to see it. It's tough to see talent right in front of you. So
I love that. He just cut me down so hard. So hard. I already knew Julie Bowen. Do you know what I knew her from? We're going to have to play Tracy.
Sandler?
What?
Was she in the Sandler movies yet?
I knew her from that, but she had a...
Happy Gilmore.
No.
Happy
Sally
Gilmore.
Jesse Raphael? Is she on there?
No, fuck you guys. She had a sitcom. About a guy that was like a bowler or something.
Grace Under Fire.
Fuck you guys. What is it? It had one name. It was a one name.
Mad About You.
Rounders.
No, it wasn't Rounders.
That's a movie.
But she was. I knew her from that. She was the wife in that, and she was a very straight character in that. And she used to come on Loveline all the time and talk about that show. I can't. It was a. It was a really good show.
Yeah, look at
Julie.
Chris.
Look at Julie. Look up Julie Bowen. Sitcom drama. It's legitimate that I can't remember the name of it because it was a long time ago. Not remembering Bonnie Hunt's name.
Ed,
pathetic.
It's Ed.
Was it Ed? It might have been Ed.
Maybe this show is going to be about Parkinson's. I don't know.
I think it might. Was it Ed? It might have been Ed. Anyway, there you go.
Julie Bowen.
Yeah.
Succession.
I think it was Ed. I think it was Ed. It was just one name.
Oh, Ed, right. Yeah.
Party of Five?
Yeah, I think it was
Ed. Right. Well, they tried to put her in so many things, and then finally Modern Family.
But who knew she was going to have an over-the-top explosive hit like that?
I mean, yeah, that
crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Levitan.
That was a cultural event, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it really was.
No one knew that was going to happen.
And my daughter watches it nonstop in reruns.
It's interesting. How old's your daughter?
She's 14.
Yeah, so I would say from about 12 to 25, they loved it.
Yes.
They were just enraptured by it.
Yeah.
That way, and they kept watching. So.
Yeah, and now no more TV shows. Strike's on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What do you think about that?
I am singularly impressed with... Something's wrong with my brain today. Nanny, Fran Drescher.
It's okay. It's your
nanny. Fran Drescher. Fran Drescher is so impressive to me.
Yes.
And her speaking. And even if I didn't agree with her, I'd be inspired by her.
Uh-huh.
And her leadership's qualities and all the things she's done. You know, she's been dealing with a lot. She's been in the middle of COVID and all these other things. And just has done an exceptional job, I think.
Yeah. So. Yeah, this is a big one. This is going to go for a while, I think.
I suspect so. If you're asking me, do I agree with it? I think it was a bad timing. You know,
yes.
The business forces afoot are bad for everybody.
Well, there's that cynic inside of me that's like, they're going to find a way to force everyone down.
I think that's right. But I hope
they definitely should be getting paid for, scanning their face. That's ridiculous.
But look, I stand behind Fran 100%. I think I'm inspired by her and she's decided to do it. Okay.
The most astute thing I saw about it, somebody wrote this thing and they were like, this is the same thing as Spotify. It's the same thing as DoorDash. And it's the same thing as Uber. It's like, you want a personal chauffeur, you know?
Yes.
It's going to fucking, it's going to cost money. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the people driving are not going to make a lot of money. Spotify used to buy an album for $12. Now for $12, you get every album.
Yes.
And that's what this is. This is just
in terms of what the business at large wants to do with the content.
The tech company just wants to be like, okay.
Yeah, but I think that's true, of course, but I think they have more control over pricing because they're the only show in town. You know what I mean? And so everybody will find ways to thrive. The problem is that we have to set this up so everybody could thrive. So
yes,
some people aren't being taken advantage of and things like that. Because look at music again as the example. People have figured out how to thrive with it. They have. It's not the way it used to be. It's a very different business.
Right.
But there are people that still thrive with it.
Yes. So. Yeah. You can still.
And it's more democratized in the meantime.
I think you make $5,000 on a million streams or something like that on Spotify.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Maybe I was wrong. So
I mean, I don't know.
Well. You grew up in Boston.
I grew up in Boston.
What part?
Yeah, I grew up in Medfield. Mm-hmm.
I know where Medford is. Where's Medfield?
People always say that. That's the worst. Everyone does that.
You know why? Because you said Medfield and I heard it. Because Medford is right there when you get off the Harvard Square. It goes Medford this way.
Yep.
There's a sign saying Medford.
No, this is way more sticks, more anti-Semitic area. So, yeah.
South Sticks? There's West Sticks and South Sticks.
I was the only Jew in my town.
Is that West Sticks or
South
Sticks?
Yeah, West Sticks, just way out.
So I went to college in Pioneer Valley.
You went
to
Amherst.
Yes.
I went to UMass Amherst.
Okay, so we were in Pioneer Valley.
You went to the good school. I went to the...
Now that's debatable. You know what I mean? Things have changed a lot since those days.
Right. I remember the kids at Amherst were really smart.
There was tough competition.
We used to beat them up.
It was rough. And we used to ride the buses to all the schools. The townies and the UMass folks would beat us up, yes.
Yeah. The five college system. They called it.
Yeah. Now they don't ride the buses at all. It's like no buses anymore. No relationship amongst the schools. It's weird. That was a reason to go to those schools back in those days.
Did you go back to talk ever there?
I have over the years. My son went there. And so I had some connection during that period. But I don't, I don't recognize it anymore. I have a hard time connecting to it. It's so different.
Right, right.
I mean, I still think I understand the STEM stuff they do, which was always exceptional. It's like sort of MIT level stuff.
Yep.
But the rest of the school, I don't get it anymore. I don't know what would make a kid go there even.
Uh-huh.
You know, I
want to go anti-college these days?
I'd like,
because my kids are about to go to college. My son's 17.
I'm anti paying up for college. In other words, if you got UMass versus Amherst and UMass is going to be, you know, 20% of the cost, I think UMass is probably a better deal. Let's go to UMass right on.
Right.
Figure it out. Well, hey, lots of resources there. You'll have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. My son's dealing with that now. We're like, he's maybe going to go to like a really, really good school. He's got the grades for it, but it's like,
I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it. It's worth it. And I don't know that you get a better education. You certainly get a better pedigree, and that's helpful. Uh-huh. It's always helpful. But I don't know. I used to be such a snob about the schools. I thought there was just, I valued so much what it did for me.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah, well, with the internet now, you can learn anything you want.
I'm just not sure. I think, plus, they're very, very smart school people at what used to be middling schools,
mm-hmm.
both doing the educating and being educated, like really smart people.
Yeah.
And I think that's as important as any of the competition, you know, mm-hmm. who you're up against. Enough of that. So did you like being in Massachusetts all those years?
Yeah, I love Massachusetts.
Do you go back?
Yeah, I go back a lot. I was just there. I just did a show there.
In Boston?
Yeah, Laugh Boston.
Where is that?
It's in a hotel in like Back Bay.
Back Bay is a new area now.
Yeah, it used to be.
Back Bay used to be this little Italian kind of thing. Now it's like the thing underground and a big development.
Yeah,
and
they got a Mastro's. Yeah.
And you go all the way out onto the piers and stuff too now with it. It used to be nothing.
Yeah,
remember the no name seafood place out there on the pier? Maybe it was already gone by the time you were there.
That's where Whitey Bulger killed somebody. I know that over there.
It was desolate out there. Now it's like Disneyland. I don't recognize it.
I like it. I like going back. I'm in LA and, you know, I like being here in Austin. Like, I would move here. But there's a lot going on here. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with the kids going to school.
Thank you.
A lot of fun when they go. It's really fun to go back and visit and hang out and stuff and sort of see their experience. It really is. It'll bring you back.
I got to have more kids. What do you think of that?
Sure, why not? I couldn't do it. Good on you. Let's take some calls. We do calls. We listen to voice messages. We just sort of see what's up with people. You're looking at that.
American comedian and internet personality.
You notice I didn't read all that? Yeah, it's you. Is anything accurate?
Boy, that's all I've done, huh?
I figured there was more. That's why I left it to you.
Boring. I really should have worked harder.
Tell us the pedigree.
Good catch. Tell us
about the acting career.
Oh, I haven't acted in a long time.
Well,
I don't like it. Huh?
When you did act.
I was on Drake and Josh.
Mm-hmm.
I had one line.
Nice.
I was on House.
Interesting.
I served James Earl Jones.
Cool.
But these were all jobs that I was just broke and I knew people that were writers or whatever. And I was like, can you please put me in like an under five or something? But I don't like sitting in a trailer. I like doing YouTube way better. Or stand up, or like, I don't know. I don't like going there. You have to park in lot G and then walk all the way over with your stuff.
Also, it's
just not fun.
But
you know, and then you're in there and you're in the trailer and I don't like it.
Well, you're not relating to an audience. You're not in control of your own material.
Yeah.
You're not in control of your own destiny in any way.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it would have been nice to like, you know, there's some people that I would love to work with, but. It'll never happen now that I'm a YouTuber, but
Now what is there now that those are worlds that don't connect anymore?
Nah, you never know. I mean, like Bert made a movie.
Exactly. Bert. So anybody could do a movie.
And Bert's movie is great.
It is great.
I saw it in the theater. You can do anything now, which is really cool, I just chose that road. Like about 5 years ago, I was doing stand up and this kid walked in and he was like, oh, do you want to come to YouTube? And I was broke. And I was just like, I made two movies, nothing happened. So I just didn't have an audience, you know? So then I was like, all right, I'll try YouTube. And then I got an audience. And so now I've just been doing that.
It's great.
Yeah,
well,
it's awesome. Been good.
Well, here we are. We'll
Thank
promote
you.
It. But Thank I you. Realized-
Bonnie Hunt.
I realized-
Rose McGowan.
Gentlemen Rose in the booth. We have not discussed Bert's movie really here. I have a question about a couple things.
Yes.
We have the answers.
Yeah, what's up, dude?
I figure you did.
Yeah, we all EP'd it. What's up? Yeah.
Well, no, these are simple-
Did you see it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
It is great.
Yeah.
But I thought the woman that played the main you know, nemesis, should we call her, the
Russian lady?
The Russian lady. Mm-hmm. Was exceptional.
She was great. The entire movie blew me away.
Exceptional. Who was that? What else is she doing? And did other people understand that was such an exceptional job? Did Bert appreciate it, for instance? Did he understand?
Bert appreciates everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
So he probably did.
That's true.
The best thing about the movie is honestly the story.
Yes. Well,
the writing.
Well, this, you know, the story, he very first told that story publicly on my radio show.
And
I was so freaked out and laughing and taken by it. I made him come back the next night and tell it again.
Really?
Yeah.
On the same show.
And I said, that is your movie.
You did?
And he gave me zero credit on the movie. So there you go. But I, you know.
Were you worried that your audience would go, we heard this yesterday?
I know, because I just thought it was such a great story and so important. And the way he would tell it in those days.
It's incredible.
He had not really told it before. So it was a brand. He was having the experience as he told it.
Yeah.
So it was like, what? This is Bert. This is nuts.
He
goes, oh, I guess it is. He hadn't really thought about it.
No credit, nothing.
No. Well, he did say thank. He called me when he got the deal, and he said thank you. So I saw the credit.
Nice.
I needed. Yeah. Can you guys tell me, did Bert appreciate her performance? Is she doing other stuff?
Yeah, Bert loved everything about that movie.
Can we get her in here to talk about, you know what I mean? Can we interview her and stuff?
I'll look into it.
I mean, doesn't that seem like a natural thing?
I'm not sure she lives here.
But I'm just saying, let's get on that, gentlemen. Let's see.
You got it.
All right, let's get some calls.
Wants the guy, he wants the killer from Bert's movie. What don't you guys fucking get? It's Dr. Drew. His memory is going. You've got a couple weeks left.
Will you come with me everywhere?
Get her in here. Yeah.
Come on with me wherever I go.
Drew, I need a partner like this.
I need a partner.
Can I get your phone number so I can call you and thank you?
All right. This is Logan.
So what do we do? Talk to people?
Yeah, we'll talk to people.
I don't think.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Dr. Drew.
Hold on 1 second, Logan. You don't think what?
I don't know if I should be giving advice to anybody. My life's a mess.
Just kind of you give as though you're somebody's friend and they're asking you some information. I'll straighten out the clinical stuff.
Okay.
Logan. Hey, man.
Yes.
Yes, buddy. What's up?
So I'll give you some context. My little sister is a counselor/therapist. She's 34. She's about to have a baby in December. Everything in her life is going good. On the other side, my older sister, she's 44. She's already got two kids. She's married, but my older sister's been having issues with addressing her, I guess, mental stability. Basically, my younger sister and my mom will go over to her house and clean her entire house for her while my sister sits on the couch and tells them what to do.
Okay.
She also has started smoking again. She goes to therapy, I think, with her husband for like couples therapy, but she doesn't actually go for her just herself.
Okay.
Anytime my mom and my sister try to like address this and say, hey, you know, maybe you should clean up the house for your kids, maybe get more involved with their school, stuff like that, she breaks down and starts crying, says like, I'm trying and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes it very difficult for us to try to address her mental stability and just try to acknowledge like, hey, you have issues and I'm 3 states away. I can't really do much. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad. My mom's in her early 70s. My sister's pregnant. You know, how can I talk to my older sister and tell her like to kind of get her ego in check, get her mental stability in check?
Yeah. Got any ideas? I'm gonna let Jason talk first and I got some ideas.
I don't know. It's really tough. You know,
No ideas is also acceptable. If you're like, I don't know, I don't have much to say. Or if you have something.
I mean, I'm of the school of like, you know, you can't enable people either.
Right. That's what's going on here, right?
So you have to draw the line for yourself too. You have to protect yourself too.
100%. Have you ever gone to Al-Anon or anything like that?
Me, no. Yeah.
That's sort of an Al-Anon principle, right? Is you take care of yourself. And it goes to like what they tell you when if the plane loses pressure, the oxygen mask comes down, put it on yourself first.
Yeah.
You can't help somebody else until you help yourself. But don't rescue, because when you rescue people, you keep them eternally dependent on rescuing.
Yeah.
They do not improve. They become permanently victimized and dependent.
Yeah.
And so that's what the mom and the sister are doing here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my approach, Logan, would be to enlist the help of your 34-year-old professional sister and go, what's her name, if you don't mind asking? Let's say Susie. Younger. Let's say Susie, the younger one. Just let's not out her. Let's just say it's Susie.
Misha.
Okay, Misha, you help me. You're a professional. What's your assessment of what's going on with the 44-year-old? What's your assessment of her? And the, you know, let her describe to you what she thinks this is. And if she thinks, and then the, your question can, should then be, don't you think you're enabling her with going in there and doing these things? And then what else can we do? What more should we be doing? Because you have somebody trained in the family. She should have opinions about this. She should have ideas about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. The issue is that she's kind of like, I would say, I hate to say it, but using her kids as like hostage negotiation where she's like, well, you know, they would do this, but, you know, I got to take care of the kids. And, like, I wish we could cut her off and just be like, tough love, you know, handle it on your own. But because she uses the kids as, like, an excuse for us to come down there and visit her or to clean her house or to send them to extracurricular activities or whatever the case is, it makes it more difficult for us to just kind of shut her out, you know.
You're saying that's for you, or you're saying that's what your sister would say, your 34-year-old sister?
I'm saying that's the general consensus for the rest of the family.
I'm not saying shut her out, and I'm not saying doing something drastic,
right.
And I'm not saying endangering the kids or rupturing these relationships. I'm saying, what are we doing? You know, what's your assessment, Misha? Yeah. What's going on?
How old are the kids?
She's 5 and 10.
Okay.
Two girls.
It's going to be a while. It's going to be a minute. This is going to go on for a while.
The other way to look at it, too, is like, well, what is she doing exactly that is that bad? Her house is dirty and she's smoking again? That's what I heard.
You're right.
So what else? Is she on crack?
She's basically, I mean, she works a 40-hour job. She goes to work, all those sort of things.
Okay, so that's good. She goes to work. Sorry, go ahead.
Is she drinking? Mm-hmm. Is she drinking?
No, she takes edibles once in a while. But I hate to say it, but the main issue is that she's extremely overweight, and the overweightness has made her incapable of picking up after the kids, willing to take them out to parks.
Okay.
Willing to take
All right.
Them
so that's
out
really
to,
that's
like,
a, so you got you've got disability here. It's sad. And so, where is this husband? It sounds like a miserable marriage too.
Yes, he is, inward. He's got some autism issues. He will do things that people tell him to do things, but he will not initiate any sort of help or anything.
So this is a really hard situation and there's disability involved. Yeah. It's really sad actually, but you do have to ask, you know, something we've lost track of these days is asking people to do something. You have to ask people to do something themselves.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, you've got to get a unified front on deciding what it is you're going to ask her to do, whether it's, you know, getting physically taken care of herself or seeing a doctor or getting, you know, whatever she's willing to do. You need a unified front on it, or she will keep kind of squeezing through and getting her way. It's sad. It all sounds very sad to me.
But I also think you should take stock in the good things that I heard. She's going to work.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yes, she's going to work. She is taking care of the kids most of the time. It's a sad situation. She sounds depressed. She sounds like she's in a miserable marriage. She's disabled by her own body, which has got to be awful. Like she's imprisoned by that. And maybe Misha is just sort of super sympathetic to all that. But you do need to start setting some limits. I agree with you. But it has to be done with everybody because she'll slip through anything else. This is Jason. Got another quick question for us. Jason, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew. So my name is Jason. I'm 28. And the last couple times I got blood work done, the numbers for my like testosterone profile were not where me or my doctor wanted them to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had discussed different options for either potentially injections for testosterone or a pellet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of wondering, you know, at my age with kind of where I'm at in my life, is there a risk for fertility?
Yes, if you're supplementing testosterone, it can suppress sperm production. But the bigger question is why you need a diagnosis. Low testosterone is not a diagnosis. It is a finding. It is a like a fever or a, you know, it's not a diagnosis. So the last guy I talked to that had low testosterone was taking, my God, my brain. I really didn't sleep well last night. Kratom, was taking a bunch of Kratom. And he's like, do you think that could have something to do with it? Of course. Yeah, it's an opiate. Opiates drive testosterone down. Being overweight, being sedentary.
But doesn't testosterone produce increase your sperm production?
When you take it exogenously, you tend to kind of suppress things. Your body is
what you just said.
When you take it from the outside rather than what you produce, if you're taking more than your body wants you to have in its system, it can suppress the production of sperm.
Well, why can't he just take the right amount?
It's hard to hit that point. And even then, much to my point, there's a reason your body is at the level of testosterone it's at. It's where it wants to be because something else is going on. And not that that's optimal for sperm production, but you just tendency is you can suppress sperm. Yes, you could hit an optimal point and get lucky.
Right.
Yes, you could.
Jason, what are the side effects of you having low testosterone? Is there a problem in your life?
I mean, not really. I mean, I guess.
Are you watching a lot of Gilmore Girls?
It should be. What's that?
Are you watching a lot of Gilmore Girls and stuff like that? I don't know. I'm just kidding.
No, I kind of got off that kick a while ago.
It's a great show.
It is a great show.
No, but all I'm saying is like maybe you have low testosterone and you're still getting erect, you're still getting aroused, everything's fine.
In other words, maybe it's normal for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, again, the range for normal is like 200 to 12, 1,800, depending on what labs you're using. It's certainly 200 to 800, that's for sure, in most labs. And again, what do they think's causing it?
I guess that's the part I have to figure out. We haven't talked too much about behavioral things that may be impacting that. You know, I exercise regularly. I'm not overweight or anything. So I don't really know what could be causing it.
You take any medication at all?
But I take an SSRI.
Well, that could do it.
I've been on for a few years.
Yep,
but that's about it.
But that can do it. That can do it. Do you smoke weed? That can do it. Do you drink alcohol? That can do it. So it may be a cumulative.
Socially, but not really a lot.
Yeah, but maybe the cumulative effect of all this stuff. I mean, it's all, I don't know. I would, whoever's prescribing the SSRI, I would talk to that person about it because people don't think about medication and the profound effects they have on their body.
Yeah.
It does. It just does.
I took bipolar medication for a little bit and it worked at first, and then I just stopped. And then I just started to really focus on my sleep, my eating, and just, take care of myself, work out. And I seem to be fine.
Balance, yeah.
Yeah.
And so bipolar is an interesting thing, because when you go way out of balance, you get in states that really require medication.
Uh-huh.
And most people can come back from that and find themselves on very minimal, if any, medication.
Yeah.
And it depends what age the first episode is and that kind of thing, lot of it. And a lot of it these days, a lot of it is drug-induced. So once you're off the drugs, get the balance back, you can get off pretty much everything.
Yeah, why is that? Well, how can someone be bipolar one day and then not a couple years later?
If it's a drug effect, it's really just drug toxicity.
Right.
Effect of the chemical.
Yeah.
And with the concentration of weed today, I'm seeing it all the time from weed. I'm seeing it from people microdosing hallucinogens. I'm seeing all this shit that people are doing to themselves resulting in these first psychotic episodes in later in adulthood, which is unheard of.
Right.
And it's all drug-induced. Uh-huh. I mean, it may have been a proclivity or something, but really it's drug reaction.
And so what are the drawbacks if he wants to take testosterone?
That whatever's going on, in his body, he's not dealing with whatever the underlying problem is. Now, if he needs that SSRI and it's suppressing the testosterone, well, okay, that makes sense. I mean, you might want to supplement it to deal with the effect of the medicine. It's always weird when you're taking in one medicine to deal with another medicine, right?
Uh-huh.
You don't want to do that if you don't have to. But if he has to, all right, we'll sign off on it. That's challenging. We have a lot of mental illness.
I don't think we helped him at all.
I think we made him think about it. Sometimes that's all we got to do.
Oh, for two.
In 3 minutes, you're going to solve stuff like this. You're going to educate, right?
I'm trying.
All right, good.
Bye, Jason.
Bunch of mental health stuff. Here's a mentally ill mother. 30-year-old, my whole life, very toxic, narcissistic, abusive mom with Munchausen and Munchausen by proxy with me growing up. Fantastic. I've tried getting help,
What's Munchausen again?
Munchausen is believing it. When people say Munchausen, they really technically usually mean Burkitt syndrome, which is a belief that you have medical problems all the time, or somatoform disorder. Munchausen technically was wanting lots of surgeries. And Munchausen's by proxy is taking all of that and putting it on the child. The child's sick. The child needs surgery. It's bad. Tried to get some help, useless. Tried to put up boundaries, but nothing has worked. A relationship with her makes me feel really bad. PTSD from trauma from her. I'm wondering, am I the asshole for blocking my mother on everything and refusing to have a relationship with her on for my own well-being? No, you're not an asshole.
No.
You got to take care of yourself. Jason said that very kindly, very empathically. It is okay to take care of yourself. A lot of people say I should always love my mother and still be around her because she's my mom, but it really hurts me emotionally. What is the right thing to do? Libby, the only thing you can do, you can't change her. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can't. This is the thing that people get want other people to get better, and other people have to want to get better Uh-huh. And it's hard work, and it takes a long time, and people have to want it. If they don't want it, it doesn't work even. You want to get better. So go get better. Disconnect from her completely for a while. Maybe there will come a time when you can appreciate her and be around her and her illness without it harming you. Mm-hmm. But that's not right now. You got to do a lot of work to be able to
Tough love from Dr. Drew here.
It's not even tough love. It's sympathetic. I heard it in your voice. You're a very empathic person.
Yes.
And it's empathic sometimes to leave people, just leave them behind.
Yeah.
And if I hope you can come. I had an abusive mom, and I just got to the point where I was like, well, and I got a lot of therapy, and so I was able to come back around. I didn't ever cut the relationship off, but I was able to come back and go, I'm going to get nothing out of this relationship. There's literally nothing in it for me. Other than what do I need to do to be a good son?
So what did you do? You kept her at a distance? Is she still alive?
No, gone. No, I would just dutifully be the good son stuff.
Yep.
And then she started leaning on me for doctor stuff.
Yep.
And whenever I would give her advice, she would argue, yell at me. And finally I went, why are you, why do you ask me if you don't want my advice and you're not going to do what I'm talking? Just because I'm arguing doesn't mean I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So she had to just be obnoxious and just for the sheer sport of being miserable and obnoxious to me.
And what does she suffer from?
She had kind of a mixed personality disorder. Yeah. I spent a lot of years working in a psychiatric hospital. And I only saw one person that fit her kind of profile. Uh-huh. That's how unusual it was. And
did that upbringing make you want to be a doctor?
No, I think my dad being a doctor, I identified very strongly with him probably as a way of getting away from all that.
Yeah.
And my uncle was a doctor. I was good at sciences and things. And then I left that for a while. And then I went back to it. And it was not easy being their kid.
I would say.
It was not easy. But
she was a singer, right?
Yep. Singer, ended up in movies and things like that, old television. But she always saw herself as an opera singer. That's how she saw herself.
Right.
Which is great. I mean, good for her. She was very talented.
Right.
But just she had a whole other life that never told us about. Had another family before us.
Oh.
Didn't find out about that.
Kids?
Until had a stepson.
Really?
Abandoned him like that after 10 years. Just boom, gone. That's what we're dealing with here.
Oh, wow.
You know, I actually ended up getting in touch with him.
You did?
Yeah.
What did he have to say?
He was like, well... He was a retired dentist from Stockton, California.
Okay.
And he was like, well, my dad was an asshole. And she was the fifth wife of this silent film star at that time in the early 1950s, late 40s. And she was 18 and he was 60. And this Stockton dentist said, it was like having an older sister. She could drive me around and stuff. And just didn't think that much of it.
Wow.
And then one day she sat down and said, I'm leaving, and was just gone.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But that, for me, fits the hatchet.
Well, maybe she had a reason to leave.
Oh, yeah. Apparently he was an abusive asshole. Why the hell were you getting married to? I mean, what was she leaving back home in Philadelphia, you know, running away with a 60-year-old at 18.
Okay.
Something bad.
So her parents weren't great.
Oh, no, no, no. Something bad was going on there. Of course, right?
Yeah.
And so the point is, when I came back around, it was like, well, nothing in it for me. I could still be sympathetic for her and understand she's not, you know, she had a tough time.
Yeah, that's the theme, really, is take care of yourself. And if you have to keep people at a distance, you got to keep them at a distance.
Not even at a distance if you can tolerate the closeness, but don't expect them to change.
Yep.
Don't expect that. It's if people do change, it's great. Well, here's a good question. This is along these same lines. This is a serious show today. Hey, mommies, I'm a new listener. Perhaps this is a dumb question, but you guys have been saying to get better, you got to do the work. But What is the work? Interesting, right? Is it the therapy specifically? I've had over 5 traumatic experiences throughout my 28 years. I want to wake up one day with no anxiety. Please help. Love you guys. Megan, what is the work? It's a great question. It's a really great question. This is going to take a minute to answer. What do you say?
Just try to be the best version of yourself.
So this is a loaded question when you really think about it. So that's one piece, which is be a certain kind of person.
Yeah.
Live a certain kind of life.
Yep.
And in recovery from alcoholics and addiction, that's one of the big challenges for them. It's you have to be rigorously honest, have the habit of caring for other people and being of service and making your bed every day and, you know, doing what you say you're going to do. So living a certain kind of life, being a certain kind of person, living up to your values, right?
Yeah.
Number one. And as Aristotle said it, just build habits, number one. Number two, you know, getting over trauma, that's a tougher order. Get trauma treated. There are trauma specialists out there. There's lots of ways to approach trauma. It takes time. It's rewiring your brain so those traumatized parts come in with the whole, and things like EMDR and brain spotting and trauma-informed care and emotionally focused therapy, sometimes over long periods of time, are necessary. And ultimately, people want to know what is good therapy. Depends on what the thing is that's being treated, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's addiction, for instance, cognitive behavioral therapy, motivational interviewing can be very powerful. Later, after your recovery is in place, trauma therapy becomes important. If you do the trauma therapy early, you're more likely to relapse. It makes you want to use. The kind of therapy I think is the most efficacious, or that I think is the most transformative, mm-hmm. is sort of in the zone of emotionally focused therapy. To have somebody just merely who is highly skilled to sit and attune to your every feeling, to do and literally not be overtaken by your feelings, but to appreciate and feel felt. Every feeling you have being felt by the other person and to have them reflect back to you some signals
it's
of that
therapist?
Understanding. That's what a good therapist would do. Would just sit and it's feeling felt.
I don't
felt.
Like therapy.
You know, it feels a little too intense.
Yeah.
It's too intense.
It always took
for
a long
people.
Time to get
it
there.
It takes forever.
No, and, I mean like driving over there. It was always like an hour away.
Well, we have it online now. We better help you.
What's
the code? Hashtag after dark or whatever. Code after dark.
A good therapist mirrors you?
Well, for really my kind of, like I told you, there's different kinds of therapy for different conditions, but the therapy that I think is the most transformative.
I went to a therapist once with my ex-wife.
Yeah.
So like she was like, you got to go to therapy. And I was like, okay, I'll go. So I go and I'm liking it. It's good. And I'm talking to this guy week after week after week. And he's like, all right. He's like, are you ready to bring your wife in? So we're going to talk to her and she'll come next week. I said, okay, great. So I said, oh, babe, come talk to the therapist. So we go in and then he just attacks her in therapy. And he was just like, you got to leave him alone.
Oh, my.
He's just like, you got to get off his back.
He colluded with you. That's not good.
But I didn't ask him
to. Yeah, no, I know. It's not good. So that's how things go bad.
They're
not so good.
I've had some bad ones. I had some good ones too.
It takes time. You got to stick with it. You got to build it. And you know, in really good therapy, it gets deep. You have deep feelings of all kinds of stuff. And you got to sit and be willing to have those feelings over long periods of time and practice it. Again, repeat mm-hmm. until you learn to sort of regulate these things. It's building your regulatory machinery ultimately.
How do you deal with, I think my biggest problem is I have like, I have like bad things looming. Like I'm always assuming the worst.
So you have catastrophizing.
Yes.
You catastrophize.
Yes, yes. Like I'm not going to have any money.
That's kind of I'm sure you brought up in those environments, right?
Yes,
so
I was.
And there is like, I had, in addition to my traumatizing mom, I had a financially traumatizing dad.
Uh-huh.
It's the end of the world tomorrow. He lived through the depression. There's going to be nothing tomorrow. You got to go bury coins in the backyard, get ready, uh-huh. you know, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
You can't get away from that. You have to learn to manage it. It's in you.
How do you manage that?
For me, it was emotionally focused therapy. It was getting to the point where, and what happens as you build these regulatory systems, you actually change kind of who you are and you start seeing everything from a different perspective because you're literally in a different position relative to things like this.
Right.
And so you can sort of manage it more easily and you don't catastrophize as much, that kind of thing.
And what about, another big problem I have is stopping work and just like being with my fiance and being present and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, some of that is the catastrophizing, right? It's not going to be here tomorrow. If I don't get it all now, it's going to be all gone.
Right.
Right. And some of that's real in this business. So you got to assess the reality part.
Uh-huh.
And she has to be prepared to deal with that.
Yeah.
And probably you get kind of high from the work too, which is kind of what happens with this kind of work. It's very gratifying.
Yeah.
Right. You have to find a way to carve out that time with her. Just carve it out. She needs to help you do that.
And what about my kids are too busy. They don't want to see me. What's wrong
true.
With that?
That's not true. You feel that way. Go participate with this stuff.
They're 14 and 17.
Well, they are with their peers are more important than
yeah,
you.
Is that what happens?
Yes. Their peers become the focus of their life. Yes.
Yeah. I can't get any time with them.
Yeah. A great way. There's two basic strategies. Sit down on the bed with your daughter when it's time to go to bed. That's when their hormone situation is such that they're most open to dialogue.
Oh.
So just go, just open-ended. How are things going? Everything cool? And then the male, look for opportunities to co-create something, whether it's doing video games together, shooting hoops together, doing something together.
Uh-huh.
You still might not get much from a 17-year-old male,
right.
But that's the way they find closeness.
Oh, wow.
Interesting, right? Yeah,
problem solved.
Yeah, that's it. Done and done. But back to Megan's question, it takes time. It's being open to the work. It's not taking, you start thinking, this therapist, I know more than, the classic thing is I know more than the therapist thinking, or I've thought about this before, I don't need this, whatever it is, minimizing, rationalizing, being in your head about anything, you're not doing the work. It's about being open to the exchange emotionally. You know, I had to walk into therapy every time and go, okay. I'm feeling, I'd have to sit and think about it. What am I feeling? Okay, I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling anxious. I got a little pain up this part of my body. And having somebody else feeling that feeling alongside of you is deeply meaningful. And then they reflect it back on their face. A skilled person knows how to do that.
Uh-huh.
So that it gets into your brain in what's called the socio-emotional exchange system.
Uh-huh.
And so you rebuild a landscape of your own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
and
wow.
And how do I stop night eating?
There's this thing called Ozempic.
Wait, didn't that kill somebody? There was a celebrity that just died from Ozempic.
I can't. Well,
Lisa Marie.
No, that was not Ozempic.
Is that not true?
No, there's a lot.
That was what the headline
said.
There's
a lot missing from that story. But you know, Ozempic does come in different doses and things too. Be careful with it. It's a diabetic medication. It's up from that. Here we go. This is Eric. Follow up on online dating. Let's get to it here. Eric, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew. Thank you for taking my call. I had a comment about you and Adam's podcast from, I think, 2 days ago. You had a female speaker on. She was like 38. She's talking about like online dating and how with this generation, it's kind of crazy. And like, I'm actually still single, no kids. I've been engaged once, but I'm in my early 40s. And I've always been athletic. Like, I played college football. Always still been very successful in the professional world. But I'll tell you, for someone who's literally met women off and on since 1998, it's wrecked me as far as getting close to a female. I definitely, like, I'm talking about collegeclub.com. This is like before even with MySpace and stuff. And not a lot of people know about it, but ironically, when it was taboo, people actually did connect and they stayed together and got married. But essentially I had issues even getting close to a woman emotionally and being indifferent like mid 2000s, just because I had done it so much. So this phenomenon is what happened with me as a outlier being involved in online dating before it was even a thing. So you take that society wide, it's not a pretty picture.
And we agree, right?
Yeah. So I just wanted to, everything in my life has gone well, but you know, I wish I was married, wish I had a kid, but I literally have dated so much, and this is not being promiscuous, it's just meeting so many individuals and that whole paradigm of choice. It's kind of wrecked me where, and I've never been to therapy, so I probably should do that obviously, but it's never been hard to meet someone. I mean, I'm dating someone now that's 29 years old.
Yeah. So there's sort of two adverse events in these dating apps. One is guys like you who are numbed out by it all, and it's all just too much, and it's a paradigm of choice, as you said. And then there's the guys that can't get dates, and they're frustrated by it, and feel like they're being left out of the scene. So it's only like 10 or 20% that are actually succeeding with these things.
Uh-huh.
And then they end up like Eric.
Yeah, I would say I would cut out all. You're dating somebody now?
Yeah, well, the thing is like it was different in the early days of online dating because you still you put a lot more investment in. It's not just swiping stuff. It was like an investment of like really talking and stuff and going out, but it just took off like when I was so busy with work. And yes, I am dating someone now. She's a Christian, and I'm getting back into my faith, and we've been dating for almost a year. We haven't been 7 months. We haven't been physical yet. So I'm taking my time, but I'm thinking in the back of my head, like I'm thinking I probably need therapy and just like kind of go monk for like a couple of years.
This is really simple. Is she the one for you or no?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just been 7 months.
He can't.
You know?
He can't
like,
tell. He's lost his way.
I think you can't tell after 7 months.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah. He doesn't trust himself to know what's going on right now. So
you'll know when it's the right person. Like
I want to believe that's true, but he may be so numbed up and so overwhelmed by all this. It is a good idea. Listen, Eric, it may not take long. It may be much different than what I was saying 10 minutes ago about it taking a long time and doing deep emotional work. That's not may not be what's required for you. It may just be kind of sorting it out with somebody and somebody objectively listening and sort of feeding back to you what they think they're hearing from you and to figure out where you're at. It might be a really simple thing to sort out.
It was kind of an addiction. Like I could go up to women and talk to them. Like I've had the social acumen, but I love getting online. And this is before the swiping. This is like 15 years ago.
It does have an addictive quality to it. And
why does he keep saying 15 years ago? What's he saying?
He's saying that when he really got into it, when he got overwhelmed by it, was years ago, even before the dating apps. That's when he was addicted to this.
That's when he became addicted.
And it's like every good addict, they get confused. And it takes some time in abstinence, and that's what he's thinking about doing.
You should just cut out dating apps, for sure.
Well, for sure. But he's thinking about not dating anybody and then sort of going back. It's not a bad idea. It's kind of what you do with behavioral addictions. You cut out all the addictive behavior, and you leave healthy behaviors, and then you slowly bring other stuff back in. And things like eating, right? If eating's the addiction, well, you have to eat, and so we bring it back in certain ways.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. Hey, do you have some clips or something, guys, for us? We got to expose Jason to what your mom's house environment is really about, or usually about, let's say.
You know what? I don't have too many new clips, but I got some old school bangers.
All right. So this is, Tom and Christina collate these, they get sent these videos and they go over them and they send them over to me to ask what's going on.
I often
don't have much to say, but it makes me numb, much like Eric. I get, my brain gets addled by this. As you see, I have memory problems.
Yeah, you need a vacation.
So this is an old school clip that we fell in love with a long time ago. Maybe you guys will fall in love the same way.
Okay.
Right before you come, I'll swallow if I want to. I have no problem swallowing. I'd stop for a minute and I'd put a big hickey on your inner thigh there and just suck on that and make it nice and red and let you remember me after I'm gone.
Sad what's happened to Joe Pesci.
Play with your cheeks.
Ed Asner, what are you talking about?
Massage
your little hole and make you feel just the only man in my life. You're just it.
I get sad with this one.
No, hold on. It gets better.
I know. He lies. He's into it. Good for God bless him.
He's doing his thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's normal size. It's not that big. Well, the one thing that I'm going to tell you is that the first time it's going to be quick with me because it's been a long time. Okay, you come. Let me see how much you come. Let me see all that come. How big a load I'm going to swallow. I need it right now.
Oh no, here he goes.
I need it right now. Okay. Can you see this?
No. What are Tom and Christina up to?
I know. What are they?
Jesus Christ, guys!
I haven't even.
I have watched the show in a couple months.
Can we go to the next part?
Come on, Mark. Don't be stingy.
It's skateboard.
Yeah. Here's the next part.
Okay, the next part is the classic part.
I'm gonna put this in your mouth, and you're gonna have to suck it dry. You're gonna just suck it dry, Mark. You got that beautiful mouth.
I don't think I've ever seen this.
You know what? Here's the classic part you're thinking of.
Yes.
Give it to me, Mark.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I can feel it. Oh, that's gonna
I
be
always
much.
End up, oh, that's gonna be Jason. Bad. I always end up covering my face. I get so ashamed by Tom and Christina and being a part of your mom's house. Not that this man should be ashamed of himself. I'm ashamed for watching.
What podcast is this? This is great. This is amazing.
Where's the classic line? That's what I wanted to hear.
The classic line?
You bet I'll be coming up in May.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you forgot about that? It's the only part that people remember about this? They don't remember
Here we go.
This part that you've just subjected us to.
You bet I'm coming up in May. You better believe I'm coming up in May.
He sure is.
I wonder if he got there.
You are terrific. I know you're going to be good in bed.
Actually,
that's all I can say.
He did. You want to know how I know?
How do you know? You were the guy on the other end? What?
I think they're playing a joke on you. I think they're just sending
no,
you.
No, that's the guy.
This is him.
Oh, this is him.
And was this? Okay, I get it. I feel like I'm. These guys, why did this end up on the internet?
Oh, so what happened is that Leo, or the Ed Asner guy, and his lover Mark.
Yeah.
So Ed Asner died of cancer.
No.
And then Mark posthumously uploaded these to xvideos.com for everyone to see, because they both wanted that.
They both wanted that?
Mm-hmm.
Is Mark still with us?
Well, long enough to upload the videos. I'm not sure exactly where he is today.
You know where my brain, I get this strange tick, right? And when people engage in these extraordinary activities, I immediately want to talk to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I want to interview that guy. I want to interview Mark. I want to know what the hell he was thinking. I want to know what this is all about. And should I watch, Mark? Are you okay with me watching this? I don't think I should be watching this.
Maybe this is his essence. This is his true...
His essence?
His true self. This is how he wants to be remembered.
If Mark is doing it, I wouldn't believe it unless it came from Ed Asner himself or Leo.
All right. But, well, I mean, how about we change it up then?
But I'm so glad that they got together.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm glad they got together.
God.
All right. Let's switch it up.
Good on him that he could get hard at that age.
Well, not of that his penis remained reasonable size.
Yeah.
Was as fat as he was.
Looking good down there.
That can shrink the peni.
Yeah.
Also comes up the total pig.
Okay. So this is my friend.
Yeah,
this is your friend.
Officer Cumdump likes it wild, dirty, filthy.
Robert Paul Champagne.
That's right, Officer Cumdump will take it like a man. I will bend down, and you could bang me as.
What are you guys doing down here in Austin? This is
so.
I need to go back to L.A. I thought L.A. was fucking.
So
insane.
When I first was on your mom's house, now years ago, they showed me some RPC classic videos. That's this gentleman, and I felt sad for him. I felt bad.
What's RPC?
Robert Paul Champagne, RPC. That's how we
call it. That's RPC. That's his name. Okay.
And I felt sad for him, and he was asking to be shit on and pissed on all the time. I'm like, oh, geez. This
guy. I have that original video.
We've got that
black
too, Drew.
There it is. This is the one. Fuck good. If you're a hot black guy.
This I've seen on their show.
Okay. Yeah. Is that a ribbon on his head?
Move in,
I've never noticed
move
that.
In, yeah. You gotta fuck me.
I think he's just got ribbons in the back.
A lot,
yeah, it's a bad guy. Okay.
Get free food, free rent, and everything else, man.
Not a bad deal.
Not a bad deal, but I felt bad for him being.
Why did you feel bad for him?
Want to come?
The masochism. It's like I.
He's still keeping it up.
You don't think that's a healthy place to be?
Well, but I was intrigued,
mm.
And so I made a house call.
Oh, you did?
And I went and saw him.
No, you didn't.
I did. He lives in Upper East Side in the sort of Harlem area.
How's the apartment?
In Spanish Harlem.
It. There's a bit of a hoarding issue in addition to some of the other stuff.
You went there?
I went there. I went once.
For why?
Because I was intrigued.
You're like, honey, I've got to go to New York and
no, I was in New York.
And this guy who bangs
told,
people for rent.
Did you guys set it up?
Yeah.
Well, they were talking to him already.
Did you film
kind
it?
Of. Yes, we filmed it.
Oh, you filmed it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wasn't going to be pissing on him or anything. I wasn't planning anything.
If you look up Dr. Drew, Robert Paul Champagne house call, you'll see it.
I see.
Yeah, and it was intriguing. It was really interesting. Sure. He is a fascinating dude. There's some distortions there and there's some hoarding stuff. And he believes he's sort of an entertainer and he makes guys happy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he likes doing it.
Uh-huh.
And so good for him.
Yeah.
And you notice there was a big costume there. He's the Officer Cumdump.
I'm doing a show in New York. Does he have any openings? Or?
Well, he used to do a drag show in...
No, I mean, could I stay with him?
There's no room.
Oh, there's no room.
There's rooms, but there's no room. you know what I mean?
Oh, why? Because he has so many guys in there blowing them?
No, or? The hoarding is such that you couldn't. You kind of walk through the place kind of sideways.
Light. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're animal
free
hoarding.
At least in a key. Fuck me.
And there's a little bit of animal hoarding too. There's some birds. Not bad, but a little bit. And the good news is the bird's room has air. He opens the windows in that room. The rest of it, it's...
It says a lot about you that you went out there and did that.
I am intrigued by these people.
Yeah, good for you.
This is humanity, man.
Yeah.
This is what
makes you tick.
It's what makes it. They're us. This is interesting.
That could be you.
It could. It not really. But, you know, it takes a certain thing to be that, but it is one of us, and we should be empathic and understand it everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, at your mom's house, they tend to just laugh at it. So
laugh with it.
With it. Oh. Now, what you have to bring me up to date on is how's he doing? What's our relationship with him like?
Not good.
He's not happy.
He's upset with us.
Yeah. And we don't really know why. Was it your mom's house world that got on his case or something?
No, we've tried to set up a call, and he's just not interested.
He doesn't want any more spotlight.
No, I think he does, just not with us. But
we withheld part of the interview I did because part of it was sort of unbecoming a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he asked us to hold it back, so we did. We held it back. The original sort of initial part of the sit-down was all out there, and it was fun.
Were there any guys there that were currently getting free rent?
I don't know. There was not.
No.
And I'm not sure those guys exist, though he said they do.
It's tough to find a place in New York. I mean...
Hey, not hard to find criminals and stuff, though. And homeless, you know, he wanted homeless people, so they'll come on in.
Right.
Though thriving in that environment could have been difficult for even homeless people, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So it's set up for RPC. It's set up for him. You know what I mean? It's like costumes and things and stuff, full of stuff. And so... God bless Robert Paul Champagne. I love that man.
Wow.
So what's going on in your life? Where should people find you?
Find me at the All Good Things Podcast on YouTube, Spotify. I'm on tour, jasonnashtour.com, playing 18 cities.
Oh, my God, it's great.
Yeah, it's fun.
And YouTube, tell them about it. Let's give them a reason to show up.
A reason to show up to my show?
Your YouTube channel.
Oh, I just talk about... Oh, my YouTube channel?
Your podcast. Your YouTube
my podcast?
Channel.
Oh, yeah. Just podcast is fun. It's my friends, and we have celebrities on, and we just talk, and... And I don't know, I just think it's a fun podcast, and I like doing it.
And so like when Julie came on, she talked about her life and things. And talked,
yeah. She talked
she
about...
She didn't look at Ed Asner jacking off or anything. No, that going on. I get it.
No, but I'm going to have her back, and I'm going to show her that clip.
So please don't.
Julie, get ready.
Please don't. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm embarrassed.
Just find me there, and thanks for having me.
My pleasure. This was
an honor, dude.
This was an interesting ride. I like it when the shows kind of go through different kinds of... highs and lows and emotional challenge. We did some good work here, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I hope we helped some people.
Educated at least, if not helped. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.